We're going to move on and take another bite out of this 15th chapter of Romans. It's important to refocus, maybe, that this is really not a theological treatise Paul is writing. It's not a theological book. He's writing a letter to some real people in a real country, in Rome. Things he's saying here are not things that were meant to pique their theological curiosity, which is sort of the way these things are treated, you know, in sermonizing in the church. People, this is becomes material for a theological discourse. You know, that's not why Paul was writing it. He was just trying to give some help to these people in the city of Rome. It's probably also important to realize that the time of writing of this letter was quite different. Rome was quite different than today. If you go over to Rome today, you probably wouldn't sense quite or anything like what was going on there at the time Paul wrote the letter. Rome was the center of a world empire at that time. And Nero was the emperor. And he was the one that put the Christians to the torch. And the one that burned Rome and then blamed it on the Christians. See, Nero wanted to rebuild Rome. There were a lot of squalid sections as the city had evolved. It was established about 750 B.C. It had been under the Etruscans since about 1000 B.C. and became independent around 500. And Caesar took over. The Caesars started in around the 40s B.C. This was generally the history of it just evolved, mushroomed, and finally took over the whole Mediterranean Sea, so that it became the Lake of Rome. And there were lots of sections in it that were squalid, and Nero wanted to burn it all down and rebuild it. So he did, but then he blamed it on the Christians. They had set fire to it. And presumably people bought that line. Used that as an occasion to get rid of the Christians, you know, and to put them to the torch. And so this was a terrible era in history and a terrible period for the church. So that may give some little insight into what we're talking about here. But in just a couple of chapters previous to this, 13th chapter, in fact, Paul had said that the Christian should be subject to the higher powers, the powers that be. Be subject to those in authority. Let every soul be submissive to the powers that be. For there is no authority except by God, and the powers that be are ordained of God. Now this is an interesting thing to think about, that Paul is writing to these people during the time of Nero, and yet he is saying to them, be subject to the higher powers. Now, how can he tell them to be submissive to Nero, who was sort of anti-God or anti-Christ? Well, you have to understand the nature of submission, the nature of the word here in the Greek text, which means to be in an orderly relationship to the government. Now, to be in an orderly relationship is different than a carte blanche obedience to, in the sense that there were areas that the government had authority in, and there were areas that they didn't. If the government would try to tell you what to believe or enter into the matters of faith, they're out of order. If the government sent out a decree that people couldn't worship God, or they had to worship Nero, which did happen, if a decree went out that you've got to worship the emperor, in that respect, the government was overstepping its authority. And you would not need to be obedient to that decree because they're out of order, and you would be out of order in following it. In other words, you're in an orderly relationship to the government when you obey them in the things they have a right to rule you in, you see. You're still in an orderly relation. You're in an orderly relationship to them if you refuse to obey the things that they have no right to tell you to obey. See? That isn't anarchy. Anarchy would be when you disobey legitimate rules, legitimate orders of the state. So they can tell you to pay taxes, and to try and prove to the state that it has no right to collect taxes is idiocy. Because the government has the right under the Constitution to do whatever is necessary to run the government. Well, it's necessary to get money if you're going to run the government. The United States was in a terrible fix in the earlier days when the Constitution was first established, but we were in a terrible financial fix because we never could pay our bills. We didn't have any money. Actually, the efforts of Alexander Hamilton that we were brought into a position of financial stability and could then deal with foreign powers on a legitimate basis and have money to maintain our defenses and money to involve ourselves in international situations. So Christian people who get involved in campaigns to prove the government has no right to take taxes from them are just being ridiculous. That would be disobeying those that are in authority. Now, you may ask me, what has all this got to do with the whole process of life? It has a lot to do with it, in that it helps us to establish our understanding of how we relate to the world we live in and maintain our identity with Christ and our principles of life. All right, now, Paul did not encourage the believers to alter the governments, as bad as it was, as tyrannical as it was, not only in regard to its own people, but the world in general around it. If today the United States government functioned in the way that the Empire of Rome functioned, there'd be just a great outcry on the part of our people. We can't even send a little goods to south of the border without everybody crying foul on imperialism and all the rest of it. See, what would they think if they were in Rome, which had put all the countries surrounding the Mediterranean Sea under tribute? The main thrust of what I'm saying, which I will come to now, is that Paul didn't pay all that much attention to trying to clean up the government or clean up Rome or alleviate all the poverty of Rome or anything else. He focused on a spirit factor. It was something deeper to give our attention to, and the best way for them to function, to be free to function in the spirit realm, was to be orderly in the political realm. Now, today in America, we have a great deal of liberty to speak our mind and to raise our voices in contradiction to the government or whatever we want to. On the other hand, if a group of people becomes too openly and outwardly anarchical, in other words, if you were to go out in the desert and raise a paramilitary organization and begin making noises about raising up your own defenses and so forth, the government is going to get a little concerned about you. If you have a religious group that is beginning to sound anti-patriotic or something, the government gets concerned about that, and maybe rightfully so. So they, and you start refusing to salute the flag and refusing to do this and that, you see, then the government gets concerned about you, and a lot of religious organizations have been taken to task, not because of what they believe regarding Christ, but what may appear to be subversive activities that are running counter to government. And Paul is saying here, the best thing to do is just don't make waves as far as the government's concerned. That's not your business. Just be submissive and open, and wherever you can do so, obey the government's directive. You see, in a religious community today, especially since recent legislation in the state at least, Attorney General has no authority whatever to even subpoena or investigate the books of a religious organization on the basis of any alleged misuse of funds by members of the organization. In other words, someone would complain to the government, to the state, to the attorney general, that such and such a church was misusing the funds that they were given. In the old days, they could subpoena the books and take a look at them. But now they can't do that, not even that. And I would just say this, the status of our rights in America, the Constitution being what it is, the democratic process being what it is, and the high levels of religious involvement by this country are such that it will be a very, very long time before any kind of legislation will be enacted that would curtail the free movement of religion in America. The reason I say that is because the percentage of people in government and the voting public is so high, the percentage of people involved in religious activity, that is, the Jews, the Catholics, the Protestants, the various kinds of religious organizations, that we have a free flow today of religious activity, and that is not going to be curtailed for a long time. If you would start today to try to alter the course of events in this country so as to curtail religious freedom, you'd have a very tough time, because so much of the percentage of the population is involved one way or another. So whatever you did to curtail the freedoms there, the Christians would also affect the Jews and the Catholics and the various other religious organizations. I'm really moving in a direction here of focus on the fact that our chief business, our chief course in this world, given the status of everything around us and given the teachings of the Scripture, is to put our dependence on the spirit meaning of life rather than on trying to reorganize America to be a pure nation. This is a crucial question sometimes. How far do we get involved in trying to alter the course of things in America? You're always getting directives. They're coming through all the time from this group, religious group, and that religious group, alleging that now legislation is being enacted that's going to curtail religious freedom in America and so forth. And people get excited about all of that, and they start getting onto committees, and they start raising funds and everything to combat all of this activity. And I am saying to you, don't worry about those things. You have a right as an American to vote, of course. You have a responsibility to vote in a democracy like this. But don't get sidetracked into trying to shape up the American governments into a religious body that is going to make this a sanctuary for all things religious. Just focus rather on sharing or on fellowshipping with one another in the spirit factor. Don't get panicky about what is happening in America, because what that does is take your focus off of the true values and puts it onto a different system. So, for example, people who get all excited about sending Christians into Washington, they get into quite a frenzy about, let's get Christian people into governments. And the problem is that Christian people are going to be swamped in the government. There's not very much you can do as a Christian in the Senate to alter the course of things. But if the Christians are trying to get behind movements to change the American governments by infusing Christians into government, I have to say that it's a losing cause. In a certain sense, the secularistic practices of the governmental bodies are such that the average Christian would get sort of swamped in that whole thing. So let me bring it back to the subtle point I'm trying to get across here, that in this day, today, you've got all kinds of movements going on among Christians in America who are trying to do things to change the government or to right wrongs in the government and so on. That's what I'm trying to get at. Movements to not pay taxes, movements to get this little measure enacted and that measure enacted. And Christians get worried about all of this stuff. someone gets a directive and they worry about it because they think, how much now should I, as a responsible Christian, get involved in this sort of thing? All right, now, let's pull it back to earth and say this. I'm talking about a man whose chief focus is the Spirit, writing to people who were citizens of the greatest empire on earth at that time, and he's telling them things that they need to know to keep their footing in that world. And he did not encourage the Christians to get involved in trying to alter the face of Rome. And I'm saying to you, don't panic, but attend rather to the daily life that you have to live with the sense that the only really lasting thing is the Spirit and not the flesh, you see. The flesh is only the casement. Now, you will listen to people get very concerned about the situation in Central America. What is America doing down there? Who's right and who's wrong? But if you followed anything at all about what's going on in Central America, you know that there is a great concern on a part of our government that there is a communist takeover in the wings or on the move there. And you have people on one side saying America is blundering and America has been the bête noire or the enemy of Latin America, and people on the other hand saying that we've got to arm ourselves against communist aggression and so forth. And this worries the Christians, right? We don't know what's going to happen down there. We know what's happening on our borders. If I can give you just a quick word about what is happening on our borders and maybe therefore give you some peace about what's happening on our borders, that yes, indeed, there is a play for Latin America on the part of communist interests. That the United States is probably going to be, not just in danger of, but probably going to be surrounded or ringed by an arc that includes the communists of Eastern Europe, of Soviet Union and so forth, to the Caucasus Mountains, then the Muslims from the Caucasus Mountains in a crescent around to the Straits of Gibraltar, who are on the surface theistic but really atheistic. You understand that the Muslims are atheistic? Because the Allah that they worship is not the God of the Judeo-Christian tradition. They're not the God of Israel. Allah is really as much of a false god as Shiva or Buddha or Vishnu or any of those. The Allah of the Quran, while it purports on the surface to be the same God that Israel worships, it isn't. Because when the Muslims en masse will slaughter Christians as infidels, they've got to be worshiping a different God. And all through the 9th century, in the 8th century, the Saracens, moving through the north of Africa and up into Spain, went across the land butchering Christians for infidels because they wouldn't, because they worship Christ as God and not their Allah. So in that respect, I'm saying there's just as much atheists. If you use atheist as the designation of those who do not worship the true God, but rather are contrary to him, or if you want to use another kind of designation, we'll say that they're on the side of Satan. We can say at least that and be understood. The communists who are confessedly, I mean, they openly will say we are atheists. They would agree with that. They go from Siberia or from the Arctic to the Caucasus Mountains. The Muslims go from the Caucasus Mountains around to Morocco and the Straits of Gibraltar. Now we leap over and we take in all of Latin America into the communist circle, which is going to happen probably for this reason. It isn't that there's almost nothing that America can do today to alter its image in Latin America. America has traditionally backed what it regarded as a stable government. They didn't really pay that much attention to the nature of the government so long as it was stable. Who can you talk to? That's the question. And in our effort not to meddle in their affairs so much, we simply backed friendly governments and stable governments. Well, in the nature of the case, we also rode into industrial might down there on the wings of dictatorial governments. In the nature of the case, they were the only government that can ever last in Latin America is a dictatorial government. Yes, you almost have to have a military junta to last, you see, just to stay in power for a week. You've got to have guns. Okay, so now, America's dealt with those kinds of governments, and I'm sure in many respects tried to help them maintain power. Not because of the money thing, but that entered into it. So 5% of the people of the land owned 100% of the wealth of the land. You see, it was just the nature of politics. America did not want an enemy on its borders, whatever the government was. Okay, now comes the rebel movement, which is a people movement, of on the surface. It doesn't take a genius to decide that the people of Latin America are poor and the leaders are rich. It doesn't take a genius to figure out if you back the poor people, you got a great mass of people on your side. So the Marxists come in with bread, promises for the people, and whilst the government is fighting to keep its footing, these people are out among the people working out social reforms, education, food, all this sort of thing. So the Marxist side all seem to be for the people. The problem is that when they have fed the people or worked to that end, a few millions of dollars put into food or into social reforms nets power. You don't even need to use guns. Just come over and get bread instead of guns. You put the guns in the hands of the people who eat your bread so they can shoot the people that have allegedly withheld bread from you. So in the end, the communists take over because they seem to be for the people. But as soon as they have power, then the bread is forgotten, and now they become a tyranny like anybody else. And there has to be a tyranny to keep power. Okay, where do you and I stand as Christians? What has this got to do with Christianity? America and Israel are integrally linked together. We are traditionally, we are historically, and in every way, the vanguard of God's people in the world. The Jews, because they're his national entity. America, because its fundamental roots are Christian. Our fortunes are linked together. We are together surrounded by the enemy. Here's this little blot of land and Palestine, called Israel, surrounded totally by the Muslim world. America and Israel together, surrounded by communist and Muslim. Those are the major enemies in the world, both satanic forces. And here we are in the middle. The United States has a psyche that will never allow it to make an armed camp out of its country. We do not have the stomach for the military. I'm not sure we should, but I'm just saying we don't. The American psyche is humanitarian. For all the blasting we get from the rest of the world, we are the grassroots of American are humanitarians. We don't want to hurt anybody. We don't want to spoil anybody's rights. We will jeopardize our national security to give a South African his rights, or a Nicaraguan, or anybody, to guarantee his rights. While they're pointing the gun at our head, we'll still want to guarantee his right to pull that trigger, because we just love people. To make of the nation of America a nation of killers is not possible, given our psyche. You will not turn America in that kind of a situation. We're so totally naive and so totally innocent and so totally humanitarian that we don't even want our Foreign Service, to our CIA, to ever tell a lie or ever do anything deceitful or anything covert. We just blush with shame if a spy for America lies to the enemy. We feel that we've just betrayed the world if we let our CIA lie or cheat or do anything that isn't Boy Scout pure, see? Well, now, in one way you look at that and say that kind of naivety will get us blasted off the earth. That's true. On the other hand, you have to look at it from this point of view and say, America is really saying, the people of America are saying, we don't want to fight. We don't want guns. We don't want to hurt anybody. Now, can you imagine Christ coming back and saying, shame on you people for not wanting to be a military nation. Shame on you for not arming. Shame on you for wanting to be humanitarian. Will he ever say that? No. Well, what to do? What are we going to do about it? Are we going to run around spreading leaflets and propaganda to say, hey, wake up, America, we've got to become militarists. We've got to learn to kill, and we've got to learn to do all these things. Are we going to do that? Probably not. What we are going to have to do is to recognize that the only hope for America, without totally reorienting its national psyche and making of it a similar kind of thing to the Russian militarist machine, the only thing we do is to trust God to keep his own timetable in all of this. Our hope is that God has his hand on the whole world scene. Our hope is to go back to, say, World War II, the history of World War II, and see that Nazism had its day and was stopped. Not really by the clever military actions of the United States, if you know anything about its military actions. It was more the hand of God. You know, we fought. We had some noble fighting, a lot of heroes, and we fought quite a war in those days. But things that happened were God's doing. For example, the Luftwaffe decided to quit bombing Britain in the Battle of Britain. The command came, it was Goering, I think, that gave the order. Britain was just about finished, and just suddenly, like that, the Germans decided to go east and not pursue the Battle of Britain and leave it, because they felt it was already in a pocket anyway, and leave it and go to the east. Now, that wasn't any cleverness on the part of Britain or America or anybody else. I believe God put his hand there and stopped that, because Britain in a very short time would have been totally decimated. How long does it take to decimate that little island over there? The way the German Luftwaffe was pounding it. I could go through many illustrations. And I say to you today that God has his hand on things. And America is going to have to be preserved by God, too. We are not going to be capable of defending ourselves. I have to say that to you. I wish it were true. It's not. Given the way we're going at it, given the approach to the military that is taken, a totally absurd approach to handling the armament of this nation, where billions of dollars are poured into absurd programs of one kind or another. You know, it isn't, we're not fashioning a hard-hitting, efficient, capable fighting machine. We're just, you know, playing games with guns and armaments, and we've got people handling that that are not really. You know, when you take, I don't want to mention any names or not, but you can't really take a crew of locals and run the world with them. They just don't have the knowledge, the grasp of the world situation to do that. You've got to have somebody with the stomach and the concept to embrace world matters and not play chicken, you know. I don't want to go any further than that. I'm just going to say to you, don't, if you're depending on our, no matter how much money we use, if you're depending on America's defense system to keep you safe, forget it. Forget it. And add to that the total inadequacy of the knowledge of world affairs that is represented. But I just want you to understand that there's something deeper for us to get hold of. The deeper thing is this. contrary to what all the doomsday prophets are saying. God has his hand on things. Everything is not so totally unstable in God's camp as it may seem. And he knows what he's doing, and he's going to bring it all out in the way he wants it. I don't want to remind you again, the focal point is the Middle East and not America. Moreover, it is not going to be a battle between America and Russia, United States and Russia. And I could give you a large number of facts or some data to support that in a purely from geopolitics and economics and history and so forth. I could support that for you in terms of whether the Soviet Union is really capable of sustaining the kind of worldwide involvement it would require to knock out America. So it's not going to probably come from the Soviet Union, I mean, between the Soviet Union and America. Go to bed tonight and be at peace. Pray for the nation. Pray for its leaders. There's not a whole lot they're going to do to alter the course of world events. In any case, I'm writing this book on the Cynic's Guide to an Absurd World. And one of the paragraphs in that goes as follows. The world is run by fools. Nobody else wants to run it. Nobody else thinks it can be run. And no one else presumes to know how to run it. You see? And, you know, we get out there and they play around, the administration, the government forces. They're just playing games with government. You know, and we get things done. The country runs one way or another. But to think that there's going to be any intelligent organization of world affairs is ridiculous. It's not going to happen. So where do we stand? The spirit is the thing. Whatever happens to the world around you, whatever way government goes or the world goes, however long our neat little package will last, the one thing that goes on and on and on is the spirit. And if your spirit is with Christ, you're going to go on and on. And let them batter the cage all they wish, this cosmic carcass. Let yourself be manipulated or whatever in the country. When it's all over, you have gained the greatest prize, which is eternal life. Nothing else really matters that much. In our lifetime, let's say everyone here in the room, taking the youngest of you here, they're not going to be more than 40 or 50 years for any of you to live. You know, to try and change something, to change the face of the world. It's all going in one direction. It's pell-mell going in the direction of feeding the body. You know, all principles shattered in the face of bread for the table. Whoever offers the bread, they have the world. I mean, in the basic course of the world, the people that are running the world, nobody cares about principle. And we all, as may, I'm saying to you, to me, don't worry about these things. Don't panic over it. Whatever government comes or goes, your spirit goes on. Jesus said, don't worry about what you eat or drink. I'll see that you got something to eat. I'll see that you're fed. I see that you're clothed. And that's been our case. If you look at yourselves, all the years of your life, you've had something to eat, you've had clothes to wear, and not much else. And you're never going to have much else. We come back to the cardinal point. The spirit is the thing. The rest of this is a cosmic sandbox. Right? Building sandcastles, kicking sand in each other's face. We do so for 70 or 80 years, and then we go in the ground, and that's the end of it. Meanwhile, we've got all the skirmishing and the flak, and everybody worried about everybody else, and worried about the government, and worried about the kids, and worried about everything, and just in a frenzy to build a nice life. By the time you get it built, you're ready to die. So what's it all about? The spirit's the thing, eternal, forever with God. That's the great thing.